You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Martinello in the inaugural, we could say, broadcast of Ask the Lawyer, a segment that we hope to present on a regular basis on Radio Maria Canada. This is, some of you may know me from for over a year, if you've been listening to what we call Radio Maria broadcasting in Italian, which carries on for the time being. And it occurs on the first and third Saturdays of the month. To those of you who are comfortable with the Italian language, essentially from about 10:45 to 11:45 to 12 o'clock. This is, of course, the last Saturday of the month, which I think we will try to keep as a regular broadcast time, at least to start, where we're going to be discussing legal themes. We've had the benefit, of course, doing the Italian language broadcast of having a number of areas to deal with. And so to some extent, those of you who may not be comfortable with the Italian language and are unaware of what we do, we try to essentially present an informative program relating to important legal themes and actions that are occurring during our current days, and to understand, to have a better appreciation of what is going on in the immediate world around us in areas of importance. The theme on the Radio Maria broadcast originally in Italian, originally initiated with immigration and citizenship, and has since that time expanded into areas of real estate and also wills, powers of attorney, and estate planning. We hope in the future to be able to continue to do that both in Italian and in English for certain, and that we will be able to expand the type of programs being offered to our listeners. So in light of what's occurred in the past, we're going to, the theme that we're going to work with today is going to be in immigration and citizenship, because it is what we would call a hot topic. It seems like every week there are new announcements that are of great importance in Canada in relationship also to the law. And so we're going to concentrate today's broadcast for sure on the immigration and citizenship theme. One of the things that we've tried to do in the Radio Maria broadcast, of course, is to have an element of what we call talk radio, or an element of communication and dialogue between the listeners and the person, presenting the broadcast. So in that regard, we would encourage all of our listeners that essentially no comment is too stupid and no question too banal, to be able to ask and to discuss with us what we are discussing in any particular broadcast. And in that regard, we have on the English broadcast a telephone connection. We will give you the number. It's area code 416 because we're here in Toronto. And the number is 245-1434. I will repeat that number, 416-245-1534. Let me repeat that in case I made a mistake. It's 245-1534. And we encourage all of our listeners to ask questions and to make comments because it's through a dialogue that it becomes informative and knowledgeable for all of the people who are listening. So relating to the theme, these are, we've had the privilege with the Italian language broadcast to be able to expand on a number of themes and certain aspects of the law and things that we read in the newspaper every day. We could call it old hat. But in the English language broadcast, this is the first one we've done. We probably have to take a step back because there's a good chance that many of you listening to us today were not listening to the Italian language broadcast. And there's some really important information right from the get-go that people have to appreciate when considering, when listening to what's going on. We all know that there are a number of issues that are very hot in the news relating to immigration, both in the United States and Canada, or how the situation in the United States affects Canada, and the announcements as a result of the change of the political power in Canada. But it's really important to really step back and to understand right from the very beginning, if you want to draw an analogy, a religious analogy, let's step back to the Bible, we'll call it. We step back to the beginning. And so you have to, and the beginning for lawyers who are in the area of immigration and citizenship is the Canadian Constitution. It's very critical. It's what any civil society bases its existence upon. And constitutions and objects and principles are very important in essentially everything that we do, and it's the basis upon which we form societies. So in Canada, we have something called the Canada Constitution, and we have an area relating to immigration and citizenship. Now, citizenship is governed completely by the federal government. If some of you don't appreciate, what we have in Canada is a system of government that is what we call a federal government. It's a constitutional monarchy because the Queen of England is technically the head of state, although she has very limited powers. And the powers that exist in the Canada Constitution are essentially divided between the federal level of government and the provincial level of government. And a lot of people don't realize that what happens in our cities, our municipal level of government, actually has no constitutional base to it. Tomorrow morning, the premier of any province could wake up and the party in power could decide to eliminate municipal government, theoretically, and they could do so. There's nothing that impedes them. So municipal powers exist purely at the behest, as we say, at the pleasure of the provincial government. But powers in Canada are divided between the federal level and the provincial level. And there are different powers that belong to one part and not to the other. For example, property rights belong to the province of Ontario. And so in the segments we've done in most recently about estate law and planning and wills, largely involve provincial law. On the other hand, if we're talking about the criminal law is decided completely at the federal level. And therefore, it's a completely different level of government and has a different area of responsibility. Immigration is, so citizenship is purely a federal, you could say Ottawa perspective, but it's where the head of the federal government is in Ottawa. And it is completely citizenship-based law on a national level. There is no provincial citizenship law. But immigration is quite separate from that. And this oftentimes surprises people because they always are used to seeing in the papers the Minister of Immigration, who was formerly Minister McCallum since the new elections and the election of the Liberal government, and now Minister Hussein from Toronto. And so people just had always assumed that it was purely a federal matter. This is not the case. It never has been, actually. It's just that sometimes it wasn't put into practice. As we know, to any of our listeners who could be listening to us from Quebec, the province of Quebec has always been much more forthright, largely due to the Francophone existence and to the protection of the French language rights, to maintaining a separate program of immigration relating to people who are French-speaking who wish to immigrate to Quebec. And so they've, from the very get-go, been, in fact, much more actively involved than any provinces were in trying to encourage people to come to Quebec who were also French-speaking. And in case people don't realize it, on the federal level, we are a bilingual country. That is, English and French are our official languages. And even here in Ontario, we have the same situation. And there are in other provinces variations of the same. But anyways, so what we have is we have a situation where Quebec has always been in the lead to attending to immigration matters for the province itself. And what's happened in the last 10 to 15 years in particular is that slowly but surely, all the provinces who had the legal power to become involved in immigration have started a bit at a time to becoming more and more involved in deciding who comes to Ontario in addition to whatever the federal standards are. So what occurs is that, and one can understand this very much so, just as in Quebec, the ability to speak French is very important to live and work in Quebec, so too there are different nuances in every province. So, for example, although we are quite an urban society, we also know, for example, that in Saskatchewan, there is a larger rural presence. We know, for example, in Alberta, there is a large petrochemical business and industry that, in large part, does not exist to the same extent in other provinces. And therefore, those provinces are interested in ensuring that the economic growth and development of their society meets their needs. And as we know, that sometimes there is a disconnect between head office, which we will call Ottawa, and the other provinces. And so there is an increasing collaboration that is occurring between federal and provincial governments, where they're agreeing on how to adapt to certain basic special needs of the provinces. And so that, as we talk today, is not only the constitutional base. Again, powers are divided between the provinces and the federal government, but we see a growing practical implementation of that rule of law, which is what we're talking about, on a day-by-day basis in terms of immigration law. So that is the starting point, and people should know that there are certain aspects even of the provincial law that, in fact, are federal concerns. For example, the province of Ontario cannot decide that they want to allow criminals to come into Ontario to create an absurd example. There are standards set on a national basis as to who and who cannot come into Canada on various categories if they have past criminal conduct, and people should know that. It is also true that they have established standards relating to the health of people. So just because someone wants to come to Canada because they can take advantage of our unique healthcare system, does not mean that they can do so and that they can access it. The rules are quite prohibitive, quite limited, and it's just not true that we allow every person who shows up at the borders to stay in Canada. So that's the constitutional and practical base of what occurs on immigration and citizenship law. So what we're going to do is what we try to do with the programs is we try not to have you not be listening to us actively, but we try to do roughly 20 minute segments depending on what we're discussing. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you a little bit of a coffee break now, or a water break or tea break, so you can relax. And then we'll come back and continue with the discussion on immigration and citizenship law. Thanks, Alex. We're back in the studio again after a little break, as we've been talking about this morning. Immigration and citizenship law is the theme. And in the first segment, I've reviewed with you very briefly the distinctions between immigration and citizenship law on a federal and provincial level, so that we all know now that when we see somebody in Ontario called the Minister of Citizenship, and we see someone on the federal level do it, we can understand that they have different perspectives, although they collaborate with each other. So that is the constitutional base. So the other question is, well, what's so important about all these people coming in? Who comes in? And there's a great deal of, unfortunately, misnomer and urban legends, we'll call it, concerning who comes to Canada. The government of Canada essentially establishes every year a target. Some people would call it a quota, but the number of people that they feel they can handle with the resources that they have to come to Canada every year. Now, once again, there's a few things we have to understand about immigration to Canada. It has been the policy. I've been practicing for 38 years in this field. And, you know, some of our listeners who would be as old as myself would know that the population of Canada has been on a steady ascent over a long number of years and continues to be so. In fact, Canada is on the path towards a population of somewhere between 50 and 60 million people, which is all to the good, by the way, because we have an enormous country, even though a lot of the more arable land is in the southern portion of it. We have an enormous country with great resources, and we have the ability to integrate a number of people and to grow the population. And what we call a demographic basis, it's quite appropriate for Canada to take people in, and it's also quite appropriate for Canada to decide who comes to Canada. And so it's, once again, it's not an immigration where people just can arrive from everywhere and they decide to show up. Canada's system is not that way. Our system is based essentially on the old Anglo-Saxon jurisdiction of deciding who comes to Canada, and that has been the basis of immigration law and policy. And at the very heart of all of it, absent some, we'll call it, humanitarian aspects, and from that I mean somebody marries somebody from maybe from where they've come, from another country, and they, of course, want to bring their spouse or their children to Canada. Absent those kinds of situations, really, Canadian immigration law has always been based on the very practical foundation, which is the ability of a person to come to Canada to economically establish himself and integrate himself into Canadian society. That is the philosophical base of all Canadian immigration law, and it has been from day one. The ability of the person to come to Canada to economically integrate and establish himself in Canada. And so everything else that is around it in terms of the rules are just how we determine from time to time who those people are, how they're going to come. And so what we have is we have a movement right now. The target that I mentioned before that the federal government has established for immigration is roughly in the 300 to 350,000 people a year range. Now, some people may feel alarmed by that number, but actually it's not, aside from the size of Canada, because we currently have 36 million people in Canada. And mathematics teaches us that if you have X number of people coming to Canada and so many people being born and so many people dying, that there will be a mathematical projection of people going forward. And that's essentially what has occurred. So probably within a 30-year period, 30 to 40-year period, we will see Canada reach the 50 to 60 million person range. But it's always based on a number of assumptions. And one of the most important assumptions is the rate of birth per woman in Canada. That rate has steadily declined over the years from the 60s to 3 to now about 1.6. And demographers all know that the magic number to maintain a population is in fact 2.2. That is the magic number, 2.2 children per woman, because there's people who don't get married, there are people who might die prematurely, there are people who become priests, nuns, ministers, whatever the situation is, but 2.2 is replacement number. So you can understand, if 2.2 is replacement number and 1.6 is the number, there's a shortfall, and that means the population is going to start to decline over time as people die. And that's exactly what the situation is. And some of you might think, oh, this is just a big joke. You know, Martinello's just giving us, some razzmatazz about what's going on. Actually, it's not a joke. Yeah, all you have to do is read the newspapers and see what's happening in Japan. Japanese society has not encouraged immigration. And some people would say that Japanese society, unfortunately, is not very open, or some people would even say racist, to non-Japanese. And there, the population growth, in fact, last year, more people died in Japan than were born. So they're seeing the population of Japan will retreat unless there's wide-scale immigration or an increase in the number of children per woman, because the normal Japanese woman is having an average of about one child. We see the same thing almost starting to occur, absent immigration, in Italy, where the rate of the number of children per woman is down around 1.4, 1.5. There are certain parts of Italy where a cousin of mine lives in what we call Liguria, which would be the Italian Riviera area, where it's like 1.1. So you see that these things make a big difference. In Italy, there is a movement towards immigration, so the numbers are staying stable for the time being. But in Canada, we, true, perhaps as a product of a wealthy society and everything that we have, we are essentially, or costly society, some would say, we have this 1.6 figure. And that differential, that demographic void, is being met by immigration today. And so what that means is, in fact, we have to allow a number of people to come in just to maintain the current population base. So all of the immigration that we have now, and we've known this for years, although it's sometimes politically sensitive, but Canada is really a world leader with respect to the ability to not only attract, but to integrate people into society. Canada really is a worldwide model. Many immigration lawyers, not just myself, have traveled for years and see what happens on a national basis. And there's a lot to be admired, as critical as we are of our own system. But there are, that 300,000-350,000 number is sort of the minimum that's going to be required because of the demographic void. So on top of that, the as I said, the idea is to allow people to economically maintain themselves and integrate into Canadian society. So naturally, there is a tendency in the law today to encourage people who do what? Who are probably younger, who are likely to have more children, who are able to do work that is required in Canada, for which there is a demand, especially of a technological society. There's a great myth in Canada. We call it urban legends, but it's a myth. It's an urban myth where people think that because 25 people show up in Manitoba trying to sneak from into the U.S. to Canada, that we're being invaded by hordes of people trying to immigrate into Canada. It's not true. It's very hard to come to Canada from a physical perspective. And the numbers that actually are involved with people who are traditionally have some dispersions cast upon them are the so-called refugee applicants. They probably represent, on average, no more than 10% of the population that comes from outside of Canada. So of this 300,000 to 350,000 people, probably around 30,000 are refugees. So most people are quite surprised to hear that, because they see somebody who's a little bit different than themselves walking the streets of their neighborhood, and they think, well, that guy there, he must be, he represents these hordes. But it's not true. So you say, well, who is it that comes to Canada? Who are these 350,000 people? As I said, 10% tend to be immigration. Probably about 140,000, 150,000 of them tend to be what we call family immigration. These would be sponsorships, people who may bring their parents or grandparents to Canada or have children who are left behind. There's a wide range of these people. And so they're probably no more than about 140,000 a year. And so that is, once again, if you think about it, if we're trying to encourage younger, more well-educated in general, or people who have certain skill sets, who speak English or French, and that also becomes important as we will discuss in upcoming episodes of the immigration and citizenship law segments. People who have those abilities and they're younger, if those are the people that we're seeking to attract, it's just natural. They'll want to get married and share a life with someone and have their own families, just like a lot of us who would be listening to this broadcast are going through or have gone through. So the other people, the large mass of them, and the movement is towards economic immigrants. So these are the other 150, 60, 70, 80,000 people who come to Canada, not necessarily even in search of work, but who have work or will be very easy for them to find work because of this particular skill sets that they have and their experience. So it's very important to appreciate that most of the people who are coming to Canada are paying their way. And this is something to understand. Also, another sort of myth that people have in terms of immigration is that it doesn't cost anybody anything to come to Canada. And nothing should be further from the truth. Because those of us who work in the field know it is not easy to come to Canada. Most people who come to Canada hire immigration lawyers or immigration paralegals to attend to their legal affairs because unfortunately, or fortunately in some people's opinion, it's like doing your income tax return. You know, it should be just a form you fill in, but it's never that way. There are many, many details. I mentioned some of the situations that they're there relating to making sure that you're not of a criminal background and health situations and so on. There's a whole series of criteria that we will discuss in upcoming episodes, which buttress this point of view that we want the right kind of people to come in. We don't want all people coming to Canada who are going through chemotherapy, which is a tremendous cost on the system for which they'd not contributed over a number of years. So this is another as what I call the myth of people coming to Canada. They tend to be, generally speaking, people who actually we really do need and have an economic base. The vast, vast majority of them, in fact, are in that range. So in order to understand, like I said, about this 350,000 range, just to encapsulate it again, 10% are refugees. We will do some programs specifically on refugees because, again, there are myths relating to refugees. Most people don't realize that there are large numbers of organizations in Canada. I'll use one of them because I know a little bit about them, the Armenian community, who is heavily involved in what we would call settlement of refugees from abroad, in particular, not only Armenians, but Christians from Syria. I'm sure all of us see today the horrible, horrible newscasts coming out of Syria, the horrible civil war being played out, and the struggles against ISIS, which are manifested every day in the newspapers. And we've seen these terrible stories of Syrian families leaving. And of course, we know that the new premier-elect Trudeau was very instrumental in taking a large number of refugees and accelerating the process to have them come to Canada. A lot of these refugees are families. You could say it's part of the humanitarian aspect of our immigration law, but they're coming to Canada, and a lot of them are sponsored from groups like the Armenian groups. And they bring these people in, and they basically take care of them for a year. So this is a great help, because a lot of the refugees are not the so-called maybe ideal applicant who speaks English and French fluently or has the specific skill set that we deem desirable for economic immigrants. So we want to try to give them a hand up, not a hand out. We want them to feel comfortable in our society. And so all of these groups help to privately settle and to take care of things and to get them going so they can find a place to live, a place to work, so they can feel useful within their own families, so that their kids can go to school, so that any healthcare issues that they have are addressed, so that they become part of the fabric of our society. And this is very important. And once again, we will also do another segment in the future on citizenship law. One of the most important things to realize is anybody who immigrates to Canada has, under the law that's being passed, it's being amended as we talk, it'll probably go into place this year. We want people who come to Canada to feel part of our society, just as we were accepted. We want them to feel welcome. It's a question of mutual respect and mutual involvement and interest. And so we want them to be part of our society. We want people who are immigrants to become citizens, to participate in the democratic exercise of voting and involvement in public life. This creates stability, by the way, for all of us. And so we want people to, quote unquote, belong to our society. And so they can do so within the new law being promulgated after 4 years of being a landed immigrant of Canada, assuming that they're here. So these are the kinds of steps that we take to encourage, I would call it a reciprocity of good feeling and goodwill towards each other. And so this is part of what the immigration law is in relationship to citizenship law. So what we're going to do, we're going to take another little break in about 7 or 8 seconds, in which case we're going to then move on, and I'm going to discuss with you some of the specific categories of economic integration and categories.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Radio Maria Canada. We now continue with the program, Ask the Lawyer, with our host, Joe Martinello.
Thanks, Alex. Once again, I just, for a matter of repetition, we encourage any of our listeners, if they have any comments or questions on the theme of the day, to call us at 416, which is the local area code, 416 The phone number is 245-1534, 245-1534. We've been discussing immigration and citizenship as an introduction from a legal and practical perspective, the constitutional part of immigration and citizenship law, in particular immigration law being a power that is shared between the federal provincial government. We then moved on into our second segment to talk about the numbers of people coming to Canada and why there are those numbers from a demographic point of view and what those numbers in very broad terms are made up of and why they are what they are. So I'm going to dedicate the last little part of this segment to what I call economic integration, because that is real immigration, which is really a very critical part of our immigration policy, because we, the kind of society that we have, which as dynamic as it is, essentially creates shortcomings in certain areas that we just can't meet locally. And therefore, in order to keep the what we have in our society and to meet the demographic void that I discussed before, we want to have people come here and live and work and integrate and feel as that Canada is their home with, as we all know, that Canada is the land of immigrants. Even the, we go back many thousands of years, even the native population, we know now, were immigrants who came to Canada probably via the Bering Strait. But in the immigration category side, so what we have people who are able to come and work here. And there have been, as I mentioned, it's been 38 years that I've been practicing in this field. And so, you know, the laws have changed so much over time. There have been different focuses at different times. When my mother and father came to Canada from Italy, things were much more open. You didn't have to have the same level of involvement or bureaucracy that one would find today. If you had a job offer to go work on a farm, you went to work on a farm for a year, and then you were free to do whatever you wanted to. Canada was, interestingly enough, not allowing the same numbers of people that they allow today in those days. Immigration to the United States was even more extremely limited. And so people, especially in post-war Europe, took advantage of any opportunities to come to Canada. And so people like my father and mother would have had a very different approach or view towards immigration than what exists today. And what we've seen is we've seen over time that Canada more and more chooses who they want to see. And in the immigration field of economic immigration, they have moved from a model where they said, well, you know, we need people who have a certain level of education, and we're not going to worry about what job they do. You know, when they get here, they'll get along. Something will happen. They'll find something, because if they were bright enough to go to school, they're going to be bright enough to find a job. And I make this as a very broad generalization, because there was for a number of years that tendency. And contrasted with that, there was, before then, when I first started to practice, I would call a pigeonhole concept. So if you could pigeonhole yourself into a particular job and into a particular situation that was deemed to be in demand, then you would be allowed to come and work and live in Canada. So we've seen these broad movements of being pigeonholed to broad generalizations. And now today, we've gone not to the pigeonhole concept, but we've gone back, we've gone away in large part from the generalized aspect to where are you really going to be able, or are you able to economically establish yourself in Canada? That is, as I said, the overriding theme of all Canadian immigration, the ability to economically establish yourself in Canada. That should make a lot of people who feel that immigrants are just people who come here to come live on welfare know that this is also another myth. In fact, the rates of unemployment between immigrants and non-immigrants is lower with immigrants, probably because they have a desire to work. They have a need to work because they're trying to establish themselves in our very costly society, whether it's by way of renting or buying a home. And so all of those issues, those practical issues that are there, create a stimulus. In English, we say that necessity is the mother of invention, and that was as true of my parents as is true of people arriving today. They all have the similar goals, no matter what their religious or cultural or linguistic backgrounds. They want to have a better life for themselves and especially for their children. They want to be able to have, besides buying a car, you know, maybe Alex, he wants to buy a BMW. I don't know what Alex likes. Or I would like a Ferrari because I'm Italian in background. So whatever it is that moves us, you know, we have goals and desires and we do these things. So, or I want to buy a, you know, a home, whatever it is, all of those items, these are things that move us to try to do our best, earn a living and contribute to our society and probably have a family if we are able to. So the immigration system on the economic side is geared to how is that person going to be able to establish themselves in Canada. Study after study after study has shown that one of the probably the most important factor to establish, there are two most important factors to establish yourself in Canada is first, your linguistic ability. The ability to speak English or French, or even better, both, on, we'll say, a decent level. It's not the sine qua non, as we say. It's not an absolute precondition, but there are, generally speaking, factors that assist economic integration. So this is why, in economic integration, people who are English or French-speaking generally now will be choosing Canada if they are able to do so because they will be able to economically establish themselves more readily having those skills. A second skill is education or trades. And what I mean by that is if I have gotten a university degree or a community college degree or I am a qualified electrician, if Canada needs me for whatever it is that I have, and I have, depending, maybe if I'm an electrician, I may not have the, you know, unless I come from an English or French-speaking country like England or France or South Africa, I may not have the linguistic ability, but I still might be okay because, as we all know, English is the first international language. I believe French is still the second, followed by Spanish. And English and French are official languages. So people who have those skills and have those background, if it's in need, are going to be able to adapt themselves to this new society. They'll be able to communicate more readily with their neighbors. They'll be able to dialogue with their society and feel part, because we know that there will be a cultural, I want to say disconnect, but certainly a cultural challenge. Because coming from another society, no matter what that society is, it's very different than coming to live in Canada. And it has its pros and its cons. And people will adapt to whatever is going on in that is good and see how they involve themselves. So these are the kinds of criteria that we know, once again, are important for people to be able, in general, to establish themselves. As I said, they're not necessarily preconditions, but they are important. And therefore, the system that we have, which we will discuss much more in detail on an acute basis, gives preference to people who are, again, English or French speaking at a decent or fluent basis, and people who have university, college, or trades that are important to our Canadian lifestyle and economy. This is quite clear. And that is why, and most people may find this hard to believe, but this is true, that even though we allow, let's say, 350,000 people a year to come into Canada from abroad, in fact, at any time in the pipeline, I call it the immigration pipeline, There are anywhere from 1 million to 1.5 million people who want to come to Canada. 1 million to 1.5 million. So you see, the government of Canada and the provinces, as I mentioned before, who have input into immigration policy, they can choose to be picky. Every sovereign nation has the right to decide who comes to our country. That is just a matter of fact. Now, we have overreaching principles because we have something called the Canadian Constitution and the Charter of Rights. We don't discriminate because somebody is Catholic or somebody is Muslim or somebody is non-practicing or somebody is from India or somebody is black or somebody only speaks Italian. We have those, we have as a part of our cultural fabric and what we believe in, various aspects of non-discrimination, but we want people to come here who can fit in and so they can feel useful immediately. And so all of the categories that we will discuss in segments in the next coming year have as their root those abilities and those kinds of people who we want to come to Canada. And once again, it is a great myth that the people who come here, generally speaking, do not have those abilities. They do. And so this is sort of a little bit of a primer, we'll call it, an educational primer, an introduction into what we talk about and how, when you understand the base, you can move into more details about what actually is occurring on a day-by-day basis to understand to understand the headlines, essentially. But that is the base, constitutional division of powers between the provincial and federal government, the demographic need to get about, right now, at least 350,000 people a year coming to Canada, and that we have a transparent and rule of law system to allow the people that we need to come into Canada. So on that note, we are going to terminate the session today. We will be trying probably to, I think the format and the schedule will be still worked out. And please listen to the voice of Catholic Radio, Radio Maria, in as much as you can. There will be other people presenting from time to time. It's an area of growth. Tell your friends, tell your family that there's these crazy people even talking about the law and our society and challenging you to come and listen to us and to help Radio Maria grow. So on that basis, I'm going to turn the microphone back to Alex and going to wish you all a wonderful weekend. And we hope to hear from you soon. All the best. Ciao.
You have been listening to Ask the Lawyer, hosted by Joe Martinello, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.